Hey, this is Liege, and you're listening to TCR.
Okay, so let's start.
Hello. Hello, and welcome to another edition of The Center Ring, a.k.a. TCR, a.k.a. your favorite esports podcast. Episode 112, coming to you live, pre-recorded from an undisclosed location. The date, July 3rd, 2018, the eve before our nation's freedom. The time, 8:21 p.m. Central Standard Time. Did I say this was episode 112, right? I did. Coming to you live from an undisclosed location. My name is Tim. Hello. Alongside me, as always, we have Anuj. Hello, Anuj.
How's it going, fellas?
Look at that. Someone's mic sounds better.
You know, it's fixed, finally. Oh, you know what I did? I did a lot of things here. I switched the USB port.
It's crazy. It's crazy how technology
Amazing.
Works.
Knowledge. Amazing.
And we have a new host on the show. Old Brett died. Now we have new Brett with a fancier mic. Hello.
Hello. I absorbed him.
Wow, look at that.
Man, it sounded so good.
I'm looking in the background because we can see each other now. And I just see kittens in the background of Anuja's, like, webcam.
Running.
Crack the hell out of me. Oh, my God.
Yeah. So we have a whole new audio setup. Basically, you can't see it. But the way our setup used to be is I had, like, cords everywhere. I was operating off of two laptops plus my computer. It was, it worked. That's all I could say about it. I loved it. It served its purpose, but, you know, we downloaded some software and now we got it all on one computer apart from one laptop, and it sounds a lot better. Obviously, Brett got a new mic and it works. It's pretty dope. So with all that being said, though, welcome. Welcome to The Center Ring. We have a amazing show. I don't want to undersell it, but it might be the best episode ever. We do have a special guest. Two shows in a row with guests. Man, we're making it, boys. We're making it. We do have the head coach of Midland University's esports teams, department, whatever you want to call it. We have Nathan Ragsdale. He will be joining us alongside Sinjin, who is the coach of their League of Legends team. So, talking college esports as a whole. Just very broad. But to start the show, we had some big news breakdown over the week. Lingering news. It's been in the works for a very long time. Honestly, I kind of forgot about it. I won't lie to you guys. But the CSGO Players Association was finally declared official by Sir Scoots, which is, of course, the gentleman who's running the whole thing. Initial thoughts.
Anuj?
About time, right? Like, how many episodes have we brought this up? I feel like it's come up over a handful of times at this point. So I think in Counter-Strike, especially in Counter-Strike, with the saturation and the money that's involved, and the issues that we see with contracts on an ongoing basis. I mean, it's almost weekly you're hearing about an issue. It's really about time. So I'm excited. I think if it's done right, and I do have faith in Sir Scoots, if it's done right, this will only be a positive for the gaming community.
Yeah, I mean, you're starting off with like a list of just vocal people that are kind of in the forefront, which is nice. I'm a fan of Sir Scoots too. You know, that's a good start. I'm just anxious to see what it's gonna be like. Is it gonna be good? I hope so. But I can also kind of see some things that could throw a wrench in what's going on right now, which I guess we can kind of talk about a little bit later when we kind of dive into the situation. But I'm anxious, but it's a step in the right direction to help Counter-Strike out from an esports standpoint.
So real quick, we'll kind of do an introduction of what the Players Association is. So at the moment, they're saying that there's 90 players enlisted into it, which I think for the most part, that's probably going to be pretty much everyone in the top scene. They don't list names, but 90 players, you got to assume.
It's pretty much every professional.
Yeah, it's probably anyone that you've heard of is in there. Yeah. They are ran by a board of 7 players. You got Zipnik, Taco, Tarek, Alige, Chris J, and then 2 former Counter-Strike players, Nothing and NBK. I stress former Counter-Strike players.
You know, but you notice one thing with all these guys that they picked is these are not players that have been known to cause trouble in any fashion. They speak well. We've interviewed actually
the majority of them.
Actually, all of them almost from Zipnik's. You know, Tarek, Alige, Nothing, Chris J, NBK, and they all have that in common where they came across as like really sharp people, well educated, well spoken, and they're all veterans in the game, right? And I know we joke about Nothing and all that, but you know, he's still an active player. He's I think they found the right group, the right mix, and especially I'm happy that it's not. I know it's a little favored towards United States in terms of who's on this, but I think that the representation from across the board is really good.
Yeah, I mean, these are a list of players that have, they've been around the block. They've been here for a while. They're established. They've seen what is wrong with Counter-Strike currently, you know, that scene, and they're still relevant enough to be still in the scene and help to make a change. You know, it's a good list.
You know, and I'm a little curious though, because if you look at the players, right? I'm going to retort my statement. I was going to say I'm surprised you don't see as much Danish players, given the fact that it's going to be helped ran by the CEO of the Danish Elite Athletic Association. But they do have Zipnik, and I guess it's realistically enough. I mean, on a 7-man board that you don't really know what they're going to do. I guess that's my question, right? Is are they going to like what is the board doing? I guess I've never been on a board to know what they do.
They, I think, I mean, will determine and act in the best interest of the players, right? So you should see them making at least what I would think is terms for like contracts, you know, making if they're adding people or at least keeping each other accountable to make sure that they're what each of them are doing is in best interest of the Players Association, right? So that way you don't have just one, you know, figure who's running everything and it's like a dictatorship. The responsibility is kind of spread out and they can all hold each other accountable. And if somebody's not, you know, doing what they need to be doing, they have the ability to remove them.
So there's one thing here in the description, right, is that it's going to, let's see here, what's the official wording? As a membership requirement, the legal advisor, I have no idea how to say that dude's name. He's Danish. Doi?
Doi?
Is that really Doi? How we're going to say his name? Doi?
That's how I like to say it.
All right. Well, it's if that's really how you say his name, it's a funny name. But Doi, the legal advisor, says that any player who is contracted or actively seeking a contract as a professional Counter-Strike player and who competes at an elite level is eligible to be an active player in the union.
Yeah. And I'd like to know what he means by elite level, right?
It's going
to
be weird because so here's my take is like the elite level players. Yeah, I understand that. Any player at any level can get screwed over with a contract easily. You know, we see it all the time. Like, almost look at how Denial, Selfless had issues at times, if I remember correctly. Even if you want to point to like a super elite team, look at Na'Vi, right? Or G2, where they're basically handcuffing players in with ridiculous buyouts that no team is an $800,000 buyout. Give me a break. No one's going to do that. So it does affect players up. But my point here is what level of elite player cuts it off, right? Because the major stories you always hear about are like the tier three teams, like the really low level teams. That's where those players are really getting screwed over. So where is the players association going to be involved there?
And I'm wondering if it's not so much a salary deal, but it's something that we've talked about on the show quite a bit, is the amount of time that the players put into, their craft, and, you know, they're not happy. They don't get a lot of free time, which that's what intrigues me about this whole Players Association, how that domino is going to fall, because, like, I think it's more of a time deal, right? If that's the case.
When you say time deal, you mean like free time, like too many tournaments?
Like like too many tournaments, you know, like, to have some downtime, an off season. You know, we just had a conversation with Mike talking about how Counter-Strike's diluted, and, you know, it's tough for them to monetize it, and player salaries are just like ballooning, right? So if it is a time deal, I mean, you're putting in, you know, you're doing less tournaments, you're making less money, but you want more free time, player salaries are booming. I wonder how organizations are going to deal with that dynamic.
Well, I think
when it comes to this whole deal.
With Tim's question, the tier three players are still going to get screwed to a certain extent, right? These guys are here to advise them, not say, yes, take this, don't take this, but they would say, hey, this might be a little rough because of this. Or NBK, your buyout, it's high, but hey, they're paying you $300,000 a year. So what do you want to do?
Yeah, this is up to you.
And so, like, NBK is on the board, and part of this is the issue with his contract, right? And he's not an idiot. Like, he knew that the buyout price, like, if you're going to read five things on your contract, you're not going to read this 20-page contract that maybe they hand you or whatever it is. Probably going to check a couple of things. A, what am I getting paid? B, what is the length of my contract? And C, what is my buyout price if I want to go somewhere else? I mean, I feel like it falls into a pretty important category. So I think that with them, you know, it's just you're going to weigh your options. And I think you're still going to see some lopsided contracts, just like you see in regular sports, right, that favor either the team or the player. The tier three guys, though, these guys are just looking for a break, right? And when we're classifying professional or elite versus like non-elite, I think you're still going to, I don't think it'll be that hard to distinguish it, because especially in a game like Counter-Strike, ESEA and FPL kind of do all the stats for you. You know where everybody's ranked. People are only playing on that platform, those two platforms for the most part. If you're playing on MM, you're probably not going to be a pro player anyway. So on both ends, I think you'll be able to classify it relatively easily, but I still think you're going to see screwed up contracts that don't make a lot of sense. But hey, at the end of the day, you're making a fat check, and you're going to take it regardless of what it is.
And I think you put it kind of best with your examples of, like, I really feel like this is a board of, well, I mean, like they say, it's a board of advisors, right?
Yeah.
They can give you their input, but there's nothing they can do from stopping you sign it. So, and, you know, say if we want to be cynical, right? Say these low-level organizations behind closed doors are pulling these kids behind and saying, look, do you want to listen to them? Like, look at these seven. Do you think they have any issues with contracts or whatever? Don't listen to them. How do you think they got there? It's because they signed contracts like this and they played because they wanted to become better. You know? Like, and yeah, now this make, I mean, as a player, they got to feel more comfortable that they at least have this board to go to. And knowing Sir Scoots, that dude isn't afraid to back down from anyone. So even if a player like runs up to these guys, right, and says, look at this contract, is this okay for me? Like, at my skill level, right? That's the one thing. It's like, they can't be putting thoughts into people's heads thinking everyone deserves a pro level contract. Like, it's just, it's not going to happen.
Pro level money or a low buyout price.
Like, yeah, be like, bro, what is this, 80?
Certain people will have negotiating power, and that'll be just like in real sports. It'll be the best players.
Yeah. If you're a tier three team, don't be upset about $50,000 a year or $30,000 a year even to start out, right? You're not at that level. You're Mountain Dew League. You know, it's just don't. With the expectations of a players association, I think the players need to also have the expectation of, like, this doesn't automatically mean every player is going to have an awesome contract. There's not going to be anything shady, because, you know, that never happens in actual sports with official player unions and everything. Like, we almost have a threat of a strike every year in a major sport still.
What it gives them is one voice, right? So Brett mentioned it earlier, like, if they want to have a legitimized schedule, right? They have one voice that speaks for the majority of players, and it'll probably get things done more effectively. At the same time, it can also help with tournament organizers. Like, right now you see talks of, like, roster locks, right? Or you see things where organizations own the spots, right? These are ongoing issues that have been problems for a long time, where they can sell off all five of their players and still keep a league spot that they own. So this gives the players a voice to make some of those changes that maybe they've wanted to make for a while, but you have just a handful of people talking about it. This is one voice that now speaks for 90. You know, that's a lot of power that can have behind it. So you could see changes, like you said, not only in contracts, but with tournament organizers, scheduling. I mean, there's just a lot more to it that'll help out.
Yeah, and that's what you just took the words out of my mouth. You know, this is just the beginning of structure, which is what, you know, Counter-Strike needs. Because how many times in a year are we like, oh wow, there's this big tournament. Guess who's not going to be there? Astralis. Why is Astralis not going to be there? Well, they're playing in this other tournament that's going on right now.
Or you know? A qualifier, right? Like, there are teams who haven't showed up for big tournaments because of qualifiers. Of all things to miss a tournament for is to qualify for another tournament, which is pretty ridiculous.
So it would be nice to, you know, if they're working, they're probably not going to be working close with Valve, right? They're going to be working probably closely with, like, organizations, ESL.
Just reading from Twitter, I know Sir Scoot says that Valve has been very, I'm misquoting him. I know this. I don't have the tweet in front of me, but Valve has been involved with the Players Association. Like, as far as, like, Valve is acknowledging that they exist, right? Which is probably all you can ask for at this point. That doesn't mean that they're going to work with them, because ultimately, at the end of the day, Counter-Strike is their game and Valve runs the majors, right? The players could go to Valve and be like, guys, this is ridiculous that you're not giving us enough time for the majors, or whatever, right? But at least Valve is acknowledging it. I think the one thing that organizers or organizations, tournament organizers, and players are all going to find in common is that ultimately, at the end of the day, they're going to do what's best to make money. You know, yes, the players could say, well, look, we don't want tournaments to overlap. And then the organizers are going to turn around and say, okay, well, if you want less tournaments, that's going to probably affect your bottom dollar. I think Mike said it last week on the show, right? Like, if the players are going to expect to have less tournaments, they got to also expect less money, whether it be from a salary base or a prize pool, you know?
Making money in Counter-Strike has got to be really tough for an organization, though. I mean, if you just think about what player salaries are, if you're going to own a top-tier team, I don't know how you make money on it.
If Envious is saying that they weren't turning profit on their team, now,
not
albeit,
many are.
And, like, they're not, they haven't been good, but the brand is still huge.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah, I get that they haven't played well. But
who doesn't sponsor Envious? They have, like, every sponsor you could want. Like, I mean, you name it, and they could call them and be like, we want you to be our sponsor, we want you to pay us to represent your stuff. Most companies are going to be involved that are in the gaming community.
Mm-hmm.
So for them to not turn a profit on a fairly below average team, like, it's not like they're paying Haji $200K a year. I mean, he's probably making his academy salary as a trial stand-in. Scream was probably one of Scream, RPK. I mean, I guess these were some of the higher paid players, but even then, to not turn a profit, like, you have to win tournaments, okay? You can't just be getting third, fourth, fifth place. Like, you have to be winning tournaments. You've probably got to have a salary or two locked in for somebody on a lower price for maybe a year or two. But I mean, they should reduce the number of tournaments, but at the same time, we have this balloon of money that people are just willing to throw away at Counter-Strike right now. And that will eventually catch up to itself.
Yeah.
I think I think as far as bringing it back to like the Players Association and money, right, and this balloon that Anuj just brought up, is it might help out the organization. Like if teams are smart, and when I say teams, I mean like the organizations, not the players, like they could use this to also level out contracts, you know? Like if the organized, if the team, if players want to be like, well, we want to have everything structured, right? Well, what's stopping the smaller organizations from kind of making their own league? You know, the difficult thing is like, so in like a normal sport, like football, you have the Players Association and then you have the league.
The owners, yeah.
The owners, right?
Yeah.
Well, in Counter-Strike, you don't necessarily have that. Like even in Overwatch League, there could be a Players Association, but then you still have the league and the owners, and everyone knows their interests are separate at certain topics, right? With Counter-Strike, it's a little Wild West still on the owner side, of all sides that you think would be have their stuff together, but they don't.
Well, that's the thing. The owners are not business. Not all of them are all like savvy businessmen, right? Who knows where half of them are getting their money from, like Navi. And I mean, I'm not to point out Navi, but like you look at VP, they're paying 25K a month still to like Pasha and Neo for doing what? I mean, obviously they're not hurting financially if they're willing to throw money away, which let's be real, that's what it is. If you are giving 25K to Pasha and Neo, you are literally like Stacy's Furniture burning freaking money right
and
now.
And they
okay?
signed those contracts when they were not good. Like it wasn't like, yeah, oh, I signed it when they were bad. No, that I remember
they had
when
a
they
legend spot.
It.
That's what yes. they had. That was it.
And when they signed that contract, we said on the show, like, is that one legend spot worth it? Because I mean, now it's not clearly, but
at all.
Some mafia money.
But right. yeah, I mean, it'd be nice if the owners, like you said, Tim, get together
and had their own.
They do something right. on their own. It would be smart for them to do it.
And I'm not talking about like, okay, we need to unionize as owners and make a league and profit sharing and all that. But I could definitely, like what's from, at this point, all the smaller organizations. And when I say smaller, like I'm talking like there might be three in top tier money. I think Cloud9. Maybe Liquid with all their sponsorships at this point. And I would have to say anywhere where the SK roster goes, probably instant shoots up in profit just because the entire nation of Brazil is buying all their crap. So
especially made in Brazil jersey now.
Oh my God.
Every Brazilian will have that more than the Brazil soccer jersey at this point.
So what is, I think what should you should see is the organizations team up and say, okay, we want salary caps as far as maybe roster salary caps, but at least player salary caps, you know? That way it's like you don't have these bigger organizations sniping players out from the smaller ones by just throwing their wallet at them, you know? That's why you see these ridiculous buyouts of $800,000 for a player, because they know the organizations know that there's going to be teams out there willing to pay. Cloud9 paid $200,000 for FNS.
Jack's considered a smarter businessman. You know, it's not like he's some dumbass that's off the streets that's like doesn't know what he's doing. He's considered a good businessman, and he was willing to throw it away. Now picture somebody like FaZe Banks, okay? I don't know if you know who FaZe Banks is, but he's the original, like, the owner of FaZe. I'm not going to say too much on him. I don't know him personally, but I follow him on Twitter, and I see how he speaks. I can't imagine thinking of somebody like Mike and, like, Banks in a room and having a true civil business-like conversation. Like, they're just two different people from two different worlds that are living two different lifestyles right now. So for him to spend $500K to buy out Nico, no big deal. Mike, on the other hand, might be like, I don't see the ROI on that.
And that's where the unique thing comes in, because like it's not like we had mentioned the NFL where owners in the league, they're like, they're tight, right?
Yeah, they're like, they're on the same page.
Yeah, but it's not like that. It's not ever going to be like that, right? With owners, organizations, and Valve, or tournament sponsors, right? So you would have to get owners on the same page without like a league to kind of like back them up. and get on the
same. They just have to want to do it on their own.
Exactly.
Yeah, they would literally just have to very do it on unlikely. Their own. And it, yeah, to Anuj's point, it's like, it's because those owners are on completely different levels of life. You know, like, you got some older owners. You got some owners where, like Jason Lake, for example, when we met him, that dude is all business. You know, like, that dude knows his stuff. We walk into his office, Britt, and just conveniently all the blueprints for their their practice facility is sitting at the desk. And he's like, oh, why don't you take a look at these? And it's like, oh, I got you. No,
the guy is just, there's a different type of sharpness with the Jason Lake and seeing like some of the other owners. You know, the dude was a lawyer in a previous life. So, I mean, obviously he's not a dummy walking around.
Get Jason Lake in there with Team Caliber's owner.
Well, look, again, it doesn't make a lot of sense for these owners to do that just because I'm sure like FaZe and these guys make their money on merch, right? So if you're going to drop 400K on Nico, not a big deal. You're going to sell 1,000 more worth of Counter-Strike apparel than you would without him, where another team owner might be saying, well, for the big picture, it's probably not a good idea for you to spend 500K on a buyout, because what is that going to do? You know, how is that going to ripple across the league for everybody else? So it might take a third-party person like a Sir Scoots to just create this on the other end and then try to convince your top 10 orgs, hey, this is a good idea because of this, this, and this. But again, who knows where some of these guys are getting their money from? Do they want to be more public than what they even are right now? And they're not very public right now. These guys keep a lot of this stuff like close, you know, close knit. You don't know where the money's coming from most of the time. So a lot more challenges because there's a lot more money involved on the top end than there are, you know, on the player's side who are the ones getting screwed right now.
It answers a lot of questions, but at the same time opens the door to ask just as many, because with the players grouping up, you know, the teams are going to look at each other and be like, guys, we are getting outnumbered right now. So we'll see. We'll see. It's a step in the, no matter what, it's a step in the right direction, right? I mean, for how long have we all been saying the players need to finally team up and just, like a Nuge said, just to have that one voice? You know, you had too many teams on different pages, and some players side with their organizations, and some had no idea that their organization was even doing things. So no matter how you look at it, I think this is in the step of a right direction. You know, I think they even said the last point on this is that this board is only there for the first year, and then they're going to do revoting. So then all the players involved are going to re-vote a new board in. You can have the same board if you want. But they did put a contingency like, hey, we're going to do this for the first year, see how it goes. And then we can always re-rack. Like, this is not set in stone. I like it. I like it. Yeah. It's showing that esports is growing up. I say esports. Counter-Strike is growing up, which is always a plus. Speaking of growing up, gentlemen, we've talked about it in the past where, you know, college esports, it's becoming a thing. You have a lot more universities acknowledging it on a scholarship level, right? A varsity level for college esports. So joining us right now, our very special guest, a college esports coach for Midland University, Nathan Ragsdell, and the assistant coach, Sinjin, for their League of Legends team. Hello, gentlemen.
Hi there.
Hey,
I mean, there's, like I said, there's a lot of questions I have. We won't take up your whole night, though, getting into the weeds about college and how their views on esports.
Mm-hmm.
But in this situation, who approached who first with Midland University making esports an official scholarship sport?
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting like perfect storm situation where there are these kids who knew each other on campus, and they just wanted to start up their own gaming club. I think the league was their first game of choice, and they, you know, talked someone into making a club for them and providing them a space. They would game here and there, and then it actually wasn't until our new president, Jody Horner, she came on board, and she has had this like platform of being relevant and forward thinking and being on the cutting edge of things, and happened to be in a conference with with some of her colleagues, and they mentioned esports, and it was kind of like a flippant thing, like, oh yeah, esports, that's a thing. And but to her, she was like, oh, wow, that sounds like it could, you know, be great, it could be huge. And she brought it to a couple guys, like found the nerds on campus essentially, and were just like, hey, how can we go about making this happen? And it became like one guy talks to this guy talks to that guy, and they start meeting with the maintenance guys to figure out how to build the arena, where to build the arena. And it's just kind of like one thing led to another, and eventually they got themselves together to start up the program. And it happened to be at the time that esports was really like picking up speed in the, you know, at the higher education field. And organizations like NAC Esports or NACE and TESPA were, you know, starting to come out and, you know, make their mm-hmm. appearance. And then I'm pretty sure Sinjin can speak more to this. He's my league guy, but league has already had their fair share of experience with collegiate tournaments and what have you.
So with you, Nathan, when you say you are head coach of Midland University's esports, mm-hmm. you kind of overlook all of their, like League, Hearthstone, and any other future one going into the mix. You're kind of the head of all that, and then you what's the word I'm looking for?
Kind of hire the people underneath, the assistant to the regional manager type thing, where they like help you out on the specific sport.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. I would say that's pretty much how it works. I think that right now for a lot of universities that are not the uninitiated into like video game world and esports in general, they don't realize that each game is like its own sport. Mm-hmm. So like a lot of places have just like a head coach for esports, and it kind of encompasses pretty much everything, kind of like a director would essentially. But it is so new that that's kind of like why, you know, one person kind of does it all. And also we're a smaller school. We're in Fremont, Nebraska, which is nowhere near a big city by any means. Mm-hmm. So we don't have the benefit of being a super popular school in like California or, you know, somewhere in,
right.
By Chicago. Chicago actually had Robert Morris University was the first school to even start the esports program, and they're like right in the center of, you know, the mecca of cities in the Midwest, I would say. It's funny that you mentioned that
because I read about Robert Morris being the first one, and they started it off with a scholarship that offered somewhere around like 20,000. Is this scholarship based for the students, or like how does that work for them?
Yeah, so we were actually the sixth university, I believe, to scholarship esports as a varsity sport. And it's kind of a blank canvas for Midland specifically, just because they had a part-time coach who started the position, but they didn't really know much about how they should go about really scholarshiping these kids, essentially, like what metrics to use. And the kind of way that we look at it is we have junior varsity and then varsity kind of being the really competitive side of things, obviously, like, you know, typically, but those kids typically are the ones that their skill, they could easily go, not easily, but they have the potential to go pro, you know?
Okay.
And so on a sliding scale, you kind of have higher end that it will offer to those students. And then, you know, for the junior varsity, it's kind of like a static amount for those students who, you know, still want to compete and be involved, but, you know, they might not be the next big thing, you know.
Are they treated like a typical student athlete in terms of what they're able to do to monetize themselves?
Yes, and I think that it's like when you ask that question, it means
like if they have a YouTube that they're making money on for doing like guide videos, or there's a Corsair.
In college football, it's very frowned upon. The players cannot make any money off of their name.
Yeah, like, or if Corsair reaches out and he's like, hey, I want you to put my name on your, you know, these guys are streaming. Are they making money on stream? Are they able to do any of that stuff?
It's kind of an unmarked territory right now. A lot of schools very specifically want their students to to do streaming during practices, so that way they're always visible to the world, and their school's always being represented in some way. And as far as like where that money goes, I think each school kind of does it a little differently. We're also not part of, like, esports isn't legitimized in the sense that, I mean, it might be for different universities. I can't speak to that, but they're not an NAIA sport.
Right.
So,
because I know, like, Big Ten, Big Ten has their League of Legends, so that might be governed completely different than the way you guys govern it.
Mm-hmm.
So, go ahead, Brett. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, I mean, you had mentioned arenas, right? So is this a plan for the university to actually build a facility for the players to play and practice out of? Or, I mean, where are you playing your games right now?
We do have an arena right now.
Dedicated?
Yep, a dedicated space for all the athletes that we have, which is another, like, interesting topic. Is like, what do we call these kids? You know, I use the term athletes just because
athletes,
I think it's,
is a generic term for a competitor, right? We don't got to get into semantics. We all know
it. Right?
That feels the best, in my opinion. But, you know, people like to make jokes at that expense. But, as you can imagine, I'm sure. But where was I? I'm sorry.
The arena.
The arena.
Oh, yeah, right.
The arena, dedicated space and all that.
Right, yeah. That was one of the main things they really wanted to do. And I think a lot of schools start there for sure. They want to have, you know, it's like making sure you have all the equipment for your game, essentially. Like, you want to have all the bats and you want to have a place to go play baseball. You know, having that field is important. So they recognize that early on, and they outfit it accordingly and make it look appropriate to you know, pull in the students, which is leads to a lot of really cool designs. It's one of the spaces, as far as like sports go, that pretty open for interpretation as far as like what you want it to look like.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it is very, very much a legitimate looking experience, as well as, you know, in operation.
You know, one thing question, I'm kind of, go ahead, Tim.
I have a question for Sinjin. I want to get him involved here. As far as being like, you are the League of Legends assistant coach, but, you know, like the guy for League, right?
Yeah.
How do you approach getting players? Are you looking at people in the university? Are you looking at scouting reports? Like, how do you get players at the university?
So the number one way that, I've done recruiting in the past, but not for colleges. I did it for challenger teams and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And the number one way we did recruiting, and the method that I'm using right now, is to look at the League of Legends ladder and sort of find people of the position and rank that I need and try to recruit them through Riot Games, League of Legends client, and things like that.
And then how do you know what university they go to?
I was going to say, do you kind of like, hey, do you want to go to college?
Yeah, that's basically it. So I'm kind of shooting in the dark most of the time, as you could guess. They either aren't interested or they're like 25 or something.
Mm-hmm.
And they've kind of gotten that part of their life over with. But if I, say, reach out to 50 people and I get one or two of them, you know,
it's kind of a success.
That's all I need.
That's awesome. That's an aggressive way to do it. I really actually like going out method.
As a guy who is getting these players, going out, recruiting, you know, being a coach, and most coaches kind of view themselves as, like, in this case, you're getting kids prepped for life, right?
Yeah.
In college, that's kind of the whole spiel, right? Mm-hmm. What are your expectations for these guys? Because esports is a weird thing where you definitely don't need college, right? But even then, you have kids who are 15 who could really be pro, at a pro level there. So are these guys, I know you said they could go pro or they have that potential. What's from stopping them from joining you and then signing with a full-on team at any point or things like that?
So honestly, the people that do have the potential to become professional players are usually being scouted by League of Legends Academy teams. And what I see in the future of League of Legends Collegiate is that they become sort of the academy teams. And what I mean by academy is that each LCS team has a sort of like child team, and not like their children, but there's a parent team.
Yeah,
the
farm system.
Yeah. And they, you know, they cultivate those players and they eventually put them onto their teams or they get recruited somewhere else. And that being said, like most sports, traditional sports, recruit from colleges.
Right.
Like, there's big drafts every year for every sport, recruiting from colleges. And if we could get to that point in the future where collegiate and professional don't have that break, where they don't really have a connection right now. They don't really have one feeding into the other or one aiding the other. They're just kind of separate entities. So
I guess you can kind of speak more to it, just being a, like how you said, you kind of did scouting in the past. It's like, there is no real clear bridge, right? From being that semi, or not even a semi-pro, just being a guy on the ladder to going pro. There is no clear bridge or path to do it. It's just kind of luck of the draw. Like you said, if someone shoots you a message.
Yeah. So it's, it kind of is luck of the draw and it kind of isn't. Because you do need someone to approach you usually.
Mm-hmm.
So if someone approached one of our players and they were like, we want you to go pro, honestly, I would encourage them to do that because they would be making somewhere in the range of $300,000 a year.
Right.
And it would be a huge loss for us, but you know, that's just something that I would have to risk.
And it's kind of a compliment to you guys, right? Getting like, oh, wow, like this, we have, like, you are attracting players on that level. Right, to Midland.
Well, it's something to sell the next person in the program too, right? Like, mm-hmm. look, hey, like this guy came here, he was recognized, and he got an opportunity to go pro. So it's just another selling tool.
Yeah.
You know, one thing I was kind of curious about is obviously sports on college campuses are huge, right? Whether it's football, baseball, basketball, mm-hmm. whatever it may be. How are esports treated amongst college students? Because I feel like it's that next generation of mm-hmm. student that maybe understands it more, but how is the reputation amongst college students?
So, you go ahead.
You're the other one.
Okay. I can say, you know, it's very well received, which is something that I wasn't necessarily expecting myself coming into this, which is that, you know, I grew up in an era where if you played video games, you were a nerd, and, you know, that was a bad thing. But now it's very much the opposite. And at least 80% of all of our student athletes at Midland play like a game or two that are considered like esport games. One of them being, and I say it slightly, but Fortnite is one of them, which is like, you know, that's a point of, you know,
that's kind of the attractive thing to Fortnite. I mean, we've talked about that a lot on the show, where for whatever reason you want to claim, Fortnite has captured every audience.
Mm-hmm.
So it's. And you even have it like with Neymar in the World Cup, right? He did a Counter-Strike mm-hmm. celebration yesterday.
Yeah,
and then
he
put it on Instagram, I think it was, that after their match at the World Cup, Neymar went and played Counter-Strike with his teammates. So
they were all silvers, by the way, in case y'all were asking, except for Neymar was a one-star.
I think that's his alt account. I actually do think he's like a...
Yeah, he is good.
That's besides the point.
So... I'm curious from a practice standpoint. So, you know, in college, you know, played a lot of video games, probably too many hours in video games. But, you know, to be at that level, you had to grind out and, you know, put in the hours. How is that treated? Because I know in football, like college football, you have a certain amount of practices you can do, right? Mm-hmm. And you're limited to that. How is that treated with collegiate esports? Or do you have a certain amount of time that you're allotted to practice? Mm-hmm. I mean, are these guys just doing it on their own, or how does that work?
It's treated very similarly. A lot of the faculty and staff that I've spoken to are, you know, they know that a lot of these kids have the ability to go practice on their own time for 10 hours a day, if they so choose. But they definitely treat it the same way that any other sport would be, where it's like you have to have, you know, you can't overwork these kids, essentially. Mm-hmm. But also they specifically want you to make sure that these, you know, the athletes that you have aren't overworking themselves, because, you know, it is a thing that they love to do, which is, you know, any other sport doesn't necessarily have the ability where you can just keep going for extended hours because you don't have like that physical fatigue that a normal sport would. But it is something that they treat very similarly. They expect the balance that would come from having a very structured practice that would typically come from any other sport would, but it is definitely encouraged that they have practice outside of that, which is extremely beneficial for us in that regard as an esport. Mm-hmm. Like they can go and grind on their own and get results, which is something that I think is extremely useful for esports. Like there's so much they can do on their own time as well. But
I would go so far as to say it's not only nice, but it's required to be competitive.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, like Nathan said, we can't always have these kids practicing as much as, say, a challenger team.
Mm-hmm.
But we want them to compete at that level still.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the time, like, I have two players right now that are on summer break that I'm working one-on-one with all the time, and I'm encouraging them, you need to climb, you need to get higher rank, you need to be better, because when the season comes around, if you are not at least, you know, at this certain rank, you're going to get, you know, destroyed. You're going to lose.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
and especially,
go ahead. Finish your thought.
Especially because, you know, Midlands right now is trying to recruit a nationally competitive esports program, and so they're in a unique position to do that.
Perfect segue to my next question then, because looking on the website, it looks like for the most part, the Midland University's esports program is relatively young, right? I think, Nathan, you mentioned it's actually going into the second year, but in those 2 years, it's, you know, it's not, it didn't boom, right? It's still in that infant stage, it looks like.
Right
now you have what? Hearthstone and League of Legends?
And Overwatch as well.
And Overwatch.
Yep.
Is there any... What are the plans going forward then as far as like... how does that work? Is it just as simple of you go to the university and say, hey, we found 5 kids who want to play Counter-Strike with us? Or is it, does it have to be scholarship involved? What are your guys' plans in the future of kind of expanding?
Right, yeah. And the nice thing about esports in general is like the barrier for entry is... pretty easy to handle just because if people play the game, have the game.
And most college kids, have it anyways, right?
Exactly. So very seldom do we ever have somebody who doesn't have an account, doesn't have the game. When those people are not really going to be going into an esport program to begin with because they don't have the experience. Which isn't to say that's not the case all the time, because we do have some kids who... come on and, maybe they're doing basketball, but they say, like, I'm really interested in esports. I play this and I would like to try out sometime. That happens a lot. And
really?
because we're not, we're kind of in a gray area as far as what we're limited to doing. Like, it's not only Overwatch, Hearthstone, League of Legends. That's just kind of like the main three we kind of began with. But it's totally open to, one of the things we're actually looking at doing is opening up our own CSGO team, and moving forward, it's very likely we'll be doing something with Fortnite, just because they're really pushing it to be an esport ready game, and it's hard to not, you can't ignore it essentially,
right?
The logistics around starting your team is pretty blank as far as you can just kind of start it, and then when it comes to scholarshiping the students, as long as I have the team that can go and do the sport, and then there are tournaments that I can put them in, I bring that whatever number to my boss and I say, hey, I want to give these kids this amount to do this game. I have the freedom to do that, because there's no like governing body of that says like, oh yeah, we don't take that game. Like, we work closely with NACE and TESPA, and then League has its kind of its own thing going, and then we get like CSL. They're branching into other games as well, but there's also so many third party tournaments that you can join in, and it's mostly about being having that experience for kids to be athletes, and esports is really nice that there's so many different ways that you can be competitive without being like only in one tournament. There's so many different things that they can do.
I think Tim and I have some eligibility left, actually, if I'm not mistaken.
I could do it. I could always go get a second major. Why not?
I have like 3 solo wins, so
there you go.
Wow,
it is pretty crazy though. Like, looking back, and we always joke about this, is that like, man, if only I was like 10 years younger, the opportunities that kids have now. I mean, I know I went to North Texas and they just officially acknowledged like an esports club team, right? Like, the university's. Is finally looking at it. But even then, like, that wasn't even around when I was a student. You had like your little group of friends, and they had, we had our little group of guys at the school that all played games, but it was never even acknowledged by the university. And the fact that like with Midland University is, I mean, I would say like the way they're handling it is, I mean, I guess time will tell, but it definitely seems to be the right way as far as until the NCAA gets involved, and then you got a whole nother headache to worry about, Nathan. But until then, enjoy your freedom with how you said, like, you kind of have that freedom just to go to the university and say, hey, this is kind of what I'm thinking to scholarship these kids. They can represent the school. And you said third-party tournaments, so it's not just collegiate tournaments?
Yeah, I mean, they have the opportunity to go because we're not bound to any particular entity. So, you know, we can do, go on Battlefy, do tournaments there. There's a couple of Discord servers. I know for Overwatch, like Atreo, they do tournaments. You know, it's right. Kind of up in the air, which is exciting. But at the same time, you know, once those governing bodies come to be, obviously we'll have to, you know, suit up kind of a thing.
But it's kind of a nice thing, though. I mean, I guess you could almost look at like a win or lose situation, right? You're giving up some freedom, but the fact that you have that governing body will make kids at that point, you're probably not recruiting kids just off of leaderboards. You're talking to parents at that point in time. If you're recruiting like freshmen, right? Trying to convince a kid's parent to say, hey, let your kid come here to play video games. It's probably a tough sell.
See, I actually want to talk a little bit about that because we mentioned recruiting when you were speaking to Sinjin, which is that a lot of our recruiting does come online. We're finding like the really dedicated players, obviously.
Right.
But for a lot of the JV positions and just, you know, general kids who are interested in esports, a lot of my recruitment comes from me actually going to high schools and meeting different clubs. A lot of times, a lot of schools don't have actual clubs yet. So I'll be talking with counselors and be like, hey, do you know where I can find the nerds kind of a thing? But a lot of high schools are actually building their own esports programs as well. And they're starting to recognize that this is a booming thing that they really need to get in front of. And even in rural Nebraska, you'll find, I think there's at least three that I know that I'm in connection with right now that they have their own esports programs. They're not, some of them aren't like paid for. I can't think of the right word, but
sponsored.
Yeah, they're not sponsored, but they exist, and they're, you know, who knows, they'll get sponsored probably like soon. But yeah, there is a lot of in-person recruitment that goes on, and you know, meeting with, like, actually I have a kid in town that I know personally that I've, you know, gone out to meet his parents because I know he's really good at one of the games that we do, and I really want him to come to this university and play for us. And so I like got to sit down with the parents and, you know, talk to them and be like, hey, this is a legitimate thing, you know. And when you come and scout out a student in person and you're wearing like a, you know, business attire, and you have also numbers to back up what you're saying by saying like, we'll offer your kid X amount of money, it changes the whole dynamic, because parents, what they might consider to be ridiculous suddenly becomes legitimate in their eyes because there's money involved.
And it helps that you're not walking in shorts and flip-flops, like you said. You're handling it like a college sport would. You know, if a coach is walking up to a house, he's not wearing, you know, Saturday morning clothes. He's going in at least looking professional and saying, hey, yes, it's video games. I acknowledge the fact that it's a little... That's the trick that I always tell people with, like, if I call them esports gatekeepers, right? Where they always try to fight anyone who tries to say that esports is ridiculous, right? It's like, you do have to take a step back and realize what you're doing. And you are asking someone to play video games for a living, or asking their parents especially, right? And it's like, it on the surface level sounds a bit ridiculous, but it to us, it doesn't. Right. For us, it's a normal thing. So I think it's very cool on what you guys are doing over at Midland University. Nathan, I want to thank you again for reaching out to us. I think it's very, like I said, I think it's very cool that Midland University has an esports program, a scholarship program, nonetheless. But even the way that you are handling it, I think is all for the best. So I thank you for coming on the show.
Yeah, thank you.
Sinjin, I thank you for stopping by, giving us a kind of insight on the college scouting world of esports, which is, I don't know what I was expecting, but I guess messaging people online
Yeah, I mean, they're so far in between.
It's pretty much all you can do at this point. So yeah, it'd be a little creepy if you start knocking on doors.
Right. No, it is challenging to find who's the star athlete, you know, when it comes to esports. So, because obviously high schools, it's all exposure, you know. You know who's good and who's not. So
right.
It is a challenge for us to find, like, A, who's old or young enough to do this kind of a thing.
Right. So again, that's Midland University. If you are curious on looking at them, maybe you are a listener and you are in the age range of college and you're thinking, man, maybe I want to go play some. You could check them out, MidlandAthletics.com. Their Twitter, I think, is just Midland Sports, right? Midland_sports.
Esports.
Well, yeah. So yeah. The main one is sports, but you have your own. Midland Esports has their own. So go check them out. Keep an eye on them. I know we will. I want to thank you, gentlemen, again for coming on the show, and we'll be in touch.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right. Good luck, guys.
Appreciate you, fellas.
Have a good one.
Let's get into some E! News, shall we? Quite a bit going on this week, and to be honest, I don't know if we have it all here on our list, so apologies if something big happened, and it's been a busy week, you know, it's a holiday week, stuff happens. Starting in CSGO, we have lots of little roster moves. I say little, they're pretty huge right now. Sticko is filling in for Cloud9. And then he's playing at ESL.
Stiko.
Cologne. Stiko. Is that how you say it?
I think so.
All right.
I've always said Stiko. I think that's what Stiko. We should go by. All right, as we'll your go, resident CS expert.
We'll go with Stiko. He is filling in for Cloud9 at the moment. Snacks is joining Mouse Sports. That was pretty actually... It's kind of a big deal because he's always been kind of like the in-game leader and everything of Virtus Pro as of late, and you have the Snacks magic and everything going on, but kind of big deal that he is joining Mouse Sports. It looks weird. I won't lie to you.
It does. I wonder what he's getting paid monthly there.
I was going to say, but if you've watched any of the... well, maybe that's why he's off of Virtus Pro. Maybe they were like, all right, boys, like we cannot... Yeah, we cannot be doing this. So, Snacks is now on Mouse Sports. The changeover from the SK roster to the Immortals franchise finally happened. It was the worst kept secret in all of Counter-Strike. Like, we all knew that was going to happen, and yet, like, it was just one thing that the organization's never really said anything. But it's official.
Thanks, Stewie.
Yeah, so like Stewie tweeted out with the jersey and everything. So that's official. They are now Made in Brazil, MIBR, or MIBR, as I'm going to always refer to them as. Worst name in Counter-Strike history?
I'm sure there are some worse out there. I don't know.
You know what? I actually am not going to lie. I don't mind it. I think it's cool for a Brazilian squad. Yeah, it's I really don't. I think for a Brazilian squad, it's like... It's cool. It's their own branding.
They're not a Brazilian squad.
They will once they kick Stewie and bring somebody else from Brazil back in. Just give it time.
They're an American organization with an American on the roster.
Yeah. I think it's cool that they were able to use their own branding, though. I'm a fan of that.
Okay.
Power to the players, baby.
This isn't really E! News worthy, but I do want to bring it up. So Mo said a bad word on his stream, and then Thorin defended it, saying that...
If you don't know who Mo is, Mo is a previous CSGO pro, semi-pro, who has also been caught cheating in the game before, via video, okay? Like, you can actually see him setting him up.
So he's been caught cheating. He has been caught...
CSGO Diamonds was a complete scandal, and was a he ripped a bunch of you off. Yep, ripped a bunch of you
took,
off. That
took a
that
lot
net.
Of people's monies for nothing. Has been into many, many of fights with other people in the community. Just a real stand-up guy to represent the game, and somehow he still will randomly show up and be relevant and has viewers and he always takes pictures with like Ferrari. This is what I think. I think he is really struggling, and he'll go to like a Ferrari dealership and just take a bunch of pictures with them to make it look like he's buying, but he's never going to.
Look, if you hate Phantom Lord, you gotta hate Mo equally. They did the same thing.
True. But somehow, he said the F word, the bad one. Okay? The one that
Which one is the bad one?
It rhymes with
Maggot.
Yep, that would be an appropriate way to say it. Okay. And somehow that turned around where Thorne was saying that, no, it's us. We are the ones in the wrong for giving it meaning.
For giving it power.
Yeah, it's meant a lot of things in different cultures over time, so maybe he meant that. Oh, yeah, because that's totally what he meant. Yeah, that's it. Every time someone calls someone that, they're totally meaning a cigarette. You're totally right, Thorne.
Like, so. Blaming an African-American for us saying the N-word. It's like, y'all empowered it. You gave it this meaning. No, it had a meaning. That's why the word is not liked.
I know. So, there's that. I really didn't. I just wanted to bring it up on the show. I really had nothing to bring to the table other than that. And Overwatch News kind of teased it on the show if you looked at context clues last week. But Envious officially announced that they have a contenders roster now. Bringing back Tailspin, former Team Envy, stayed true to the name, never changed his Twitter after like 2 years. Never changed his Twitter handle. So he is back officially on Envious's roster for Overwatch. That's just kind of cool, right? I think it shows their mindset on where they're at, right? Mike says that they're not done with Counter-Strike, but getting this roster definitely means that they're all in for Overwatch.
Yeah, I mean, I get the feeling that he wants to use this like a true minor league system. Like, yep. He was excited about having Tailspin. Like, I got the feeling that he thinks Tailspin could legitimately be on this Eel roster. Like, I got that feeling, that vibe.
Yep.
So, pretty cool.
Well, and
another big announcement today.
What was that?
ESL got awarded the next major. CSGO major.
Right. I missed that one. So
that'll be for 2019, so that won't be this year. It'll be next year.
Okay, so we still don't... So 2019, what, February, right? They kind of do a major early.
Yeah, early in the year. Quarter. You'll have the face at London Major, which minors and all that are going on now. And then, yeah, next one will be ESL. And I think a lot of people were... curious if ESL would get it after the Facebook deal, right? But it turns out that as part of the deal, it will be streamed on Twitch. You're not going to only be finding it on Facebook.
Of course, yeah.
Now, when would they announce a date?
And we don't know the location of it, though,
right? 3 weeks before. No, I don't know the location. We just know ESL was awarded.
So it could be
these are per sources.
Per our sources.
Which is Twitter.
Which is very highly contested, so... In other news, you had CEO, the big fighting game tournament wrap up. Some of the big games here to look at. HBox ended up defeating Plup in the Smash Finals. And Fujimura defeated Johai, I think that's how you say his name, in Street Fighter. So, I think that just about does it for your e-news. And that just about does it for this episode of the Center Ring, aka TCR, aka your favorite esports podcast. Episode 112 is done. It's in the books. I thank you all for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you learned something today. Something about college esports, about the Players Association. What are your thoughts on it? Is it good? Is it bad? What do you think is going to come of it? Let us know on Twitter at the Center Ring, and our website tcr.gg. You can hit us up on our Discord and all social media outlets there. Thank you again to Nathan Ragsdale and Sinjin of Midland University's esports program. Appreciate them again coming on the show. It was very good to talk to someone who actually knows something about college esports.
Yo, so, Tigers, do we know what their mascot is?
Vikings. Well, they're Warriors, Vikings. But it's definitely...
Warriors. I just went generic with it.
Not a bad guess.
50-50.
Not a bad guess. So thank you again for them joining the show. Follow them on Twitter. Give your love. Give your support. We will be back next week. Until then, I hope everyone has a safe 4th of July. For Nuge, for Britt, I'm Tim. We'll see you next time.